Okay, architecture of a near-term project. What I have in mind is a media player that can be controlled by a software component. The ways in which this media player needs to be controlled is that basically something like a what's called nonlinear editing. That information can be passed to the media player regarding which file contains, for example, say video, and where in that file, which segments of the video to play, at what speed to play them, at what volume level to play them, these segments. And of course, in what sequence to play them. And not just one file, but many files. I suppose other issues, other factors, is that there might need to be many simultaneous video streams playing, that the size and the location on the screen of each thing, each video, or image or whatever, can be again controlled programmatically, in sort of and dynamically while it's sort of happening. And then of course the mixing of the audio. Which audio streams are sort of integrated together, what volume levels, how they're mixed, and so forth. Okay, so that kind of media player that is controlled programmatically, controlled by a program. And it needs to, of course, be sort of sufficiently sort of real time of well, like any human interface device. I mean, it shouldn't be what am I trying to say? Choppy. It should be the changes and transitions should be smooth and fluid. And now on programming that on a modern computing system, I think just as a matter of having sufficient computational sort of resources from the hardware to get it done. It's kind of a brute force thing, in that the hardware just has to be so, I think, just sort of oh, so have such an abundance of resources that it never bottoms out. Or never tops off. That it never hits a that it never runs into a situation where the human interface the real timeliness of the human interface doesn't that there aren't failures in the sense that that a human being can notice that it's not something isn't happening in a timely fashion. In my opinion, that's a terrible way to do things. I mean, that's a well, kind of a like a ridiculous, terrible and ridiculous aren't really the right terms. It's just it's unfortunate that there's only one computer. I mean, given the just how prolific the technology is of digital logic system design, and how we're just sort of so many people are just sort of surrounded with the tools and the information to design new systems, but that have different qualities that can do sort of something other than being a sort of a programmable calculator. To decrypt sort of secret military messages, which is kind of the core architecture that that we've been living with for the last well, for the entire this entire sort of revolution. But anyway, I that's a tangent. I transgress, I think is the right word. Maybe not. I don't know. Well, again, I think this is like another sucky recording. Just can't seem to stay on target for some reason. Okay, so there's a media player that is now capable of displaying multiple video streams, of sort of sizing them and placing them on the screen in a variety of ways. And these video streams are coming from a can come from a large library of video files, and these video streams are compositions of time frames, time segments within those snippets coming from those various video files that are being sort of composed onto the screen and displayed in a very dynamic way that is being controlled by a program. Okay, and then of course with the audio mixing and audio coming from a variety of places, the audio streams involved and what actually gets ends up sort of being displayed to the user might not come from the video files. I mean, it might be sort of separate sort of audio files, music tracks, whatever. It might be mixed in a variety of ways. Volume control from moment to moment, the volumes are of the various audio streams that are being mixed are changing. Playback speed of the various video segments might be changing, and so forth. So now one might imagine, you know, there's this sort of mosaic, this collage, this program controlled creation of a very dynamic, real-time changing collage. And it, I mean, it doesn't need to be a mosaic or collage. I mean, it might just be one video stream that is just sort of skipping segments or just changing volumes. It might be just watching a sort of a video of from a television series, and there are just little volume control changes. And maybe a few scenes are either skipped or fast forwarded. So I mean, it doesn't have to be that rich mosaic, that rich collage. It could be much simpler than that. Okay, but sort of example use cases for later. First, sort of more importantly, just to move forward, is this program that controls the media player. Where does this control data come from? Okay, now this gets a little bit tricky. Just to sort of prevent myself from going off on tangents, because there are a few components here. first is a database, and when I say database, I'm not necessarily implying a traditional relational database like PostgreSQL, like a traditional SQL relational database. I'm not saying that wouldn't be suitable. I don't know. I just haven't really gotten to the nitty gritties of that, and realistically, I might not be the person to I might actually need a sort of an experienced a software architect who understands all the sort of the issues, the sort of the next tier, the lower tier issues that are that come about after sort of understanding this proto requirements / specifications type of I mean, going from the vision to the sort of the high-level systems engineering of requirements and specifications and functionality and use cases and so forth, to an architecture that would implement this, is it's at that implementation, at that sort of that software architect implementation stage that's some very sort of experienced, capable people would need to sort of come into the would need to sort of come onto the scene and work that out. Oh, but maybe for a small scale prototype, I might go ahead and just sort of imagine that it's SQLite or PostgreSQL. Okay, so there are three components. One is a database of annotations, and these annotations could be very, very sort of rich, with very, very sort of high resolution in terms of the time frame, and sort of the smallness of the time frame and the richness of the description. Or it could be descriptions which reference sort of many time frames that are sort of spread out over a video, over a sort of a television series, or over sort of an entire collection. And I think one way to begin to at least find inspiration and at least have some basis to interpret what it is that I'm trying to say is there's this paper from Museums and the Web. The author's names that I remember being in the URL is Hobbs. The paper is called The Gernsback Machine. And then it's subtitled something about probable pasts and potential futures or possible futures, something like that. Should be fairly easy to find. It's on the just use a search engine. Now, this paper is not to be taken as a specification. And again, I've mentioned it before. But I mean, the people involved are museum people. Their perspective is on artifacts in a museum that can be sort of digitally represented somehow, pictures and scans and whatnot, I suppose. And then people, visitors to this virtual museum, sort of over the internet, can then sort of compose their own, and from the museum perspective, exhibit, sort of put together artifacts, and I mean, again, this is very, very museum people sort of mindset and perspective. That people can put together artifacts and sort of as a composition, and have a sort of a description, a narrative of. Sort of like a historical narrative that describes a sort of a perspective on history, and different people can use these can compose these artifacts in different ways in order to create different narratives. So that's a very sort of a museum sort of centric perspective and mindset, but it it does. It can be sort of the premise can be brought over into this domain that I'm trying to describe, And here, I think it sort of has some sort of explanatory power. So there's a database of all these sort of labels and tags and descriptions and so forth. And I suppose here is where things like ontology and taxonomy, of engineering ontologies and engineering taxonomies, basically of organizing this metadata, and more importantly, well, maybe not more importantly, but also sort of organizing the creation of this metadata, because I think it would be, to a large part, human beings. Paul Graham at PyCon 2012 gives a talk where, amongst several other sort of somewhat obvious and pretty good ideas, he describes the sufficiently intelligent compiler, I believe is the term that he uses, like the Gernsback machine. This is a sort of a different perspective and a different mindset, but there's a parallel. There has some utility here, and that is, while human beings are sort of creating these tags and labels, for the most part, there can be sort of the development of machine-based sort of support to do some of the more tedious work, or to support the human being, or to outright sort of automate some of the labeling and tagging. For example, if it's a video, if the video is jittery, if the camera is not stable, if the camera is sort of wobbling around, the qualities of that, the sort of the characteristic of just what type of jittery it is and how jittery is it, I think can be determined through video analysis, and to a large extent it can be corrected through video processing. VidStab, short for video stabilizer, plug-in for FFmpeg, for example, does a pretty good job. I'm considering that it's just like one guy who just like wrote something, who just designed it. It does a pretty good job of stabilizing video, but I think there could this is very very similar technique could be sort of used to analyze the video and characterize stability. And that's an example of a sort of an automated type of analysis. So anyway, as people get involved in labeling this all of this data, video, and right now what I have in mind for the immediate software is audio and video. I mean, it makes sense to be able to label text, but because of the circularity in that, I mean, because text is basically, I mean, software source code is text. I mean, it's not just, you know, it's not just books and emails and forum posts and IRC chats, and I mean, being able to mine that stuff and use that stuff to analyze human behavior, I think would just be wonderful, wonderfully sort of useful knowledge. The foundations, it's data, wonderfully useful data to on which to begin to develop sort of human knowledge that has really high traction with reality. But the problem is with doing that is that a lot of the earlier developers might just get sort of mind fucked because of the circularity, the very very sort of convoluted sort of in-your-face sort of recursion that would occur when they start to sort of trying to apply these concepts to the actual source code that they're writing. I mean, they might just go into an infinite loop and blue screen of death guru meditation, whatever, and just get out of the whole production mode of involvement. So it might be better in the early stages just to sort of take that out of the game entirely, so that there are a lot of producers. And once there's some infrastructure in place and they have some experience of the system without the sort of the immediate glaring circularity of the feedback process. But anyway, once they have the sort of experience with the bigger system, then they can sort of tighten the loop. And when that loop gets too tight and starts to cause problems for them, they'll have somewhere to go, some way to back off, without just giving up the whole thing. Okay, so annotating video and audio, creating the sort of the dictionaries, sort of the agreed upon some agreed upon descriptions and definitions and descriptions of tags and where they apply. Now the nifty thing here is that sort of unlike a dictionary that has to, I mean, I suppose a dictionary relies largely on a corpus of text, which and that corpus of text I think is not a really representative of sort of what's really happening in the world. I mean, the people who write text are kind of I think outliers, or just a sort of a rather sort of small a minority, a cast of people who are not representative. I think not representatives, not representative and not representatives of what's really, really happening. So dictionaries are based on that text. And what I propose is that these sort of tags that have definitions, that the definitions of these tags and these descriptions are based on something that audio and video, something that people, common people, the sort of the majority, can look at and potentially recognize. And it doesn't have to be just audio and video. I mean, eventually this sort of would extend into much, much richer data. And I hope and I think that where things are going is is into rich sort of sensor type of systems, rich high traction with reality sort of data collection type of information systems that are based on very, very high traction with reality data collection. And the way that data is collected, the way those measurements, it's not just data collection, it's measurement. And this needs to reach deep into sort of full stack engineering and full stack physics and full stack information science, in the ways in which the epistemological sophistication and concerns of the information system, the concerns and the capabilities and the understandings of physics in these sort of sensors and instruments that are sort of observing reality, sensing, measuring, recording reality, And then the way that data is processed, and this is the engineering, the way these logic systems meet the needs, the requirements, and the specifications of the concerns of the sort of the physics and and of the information science are all. Anyway, I would hope that it sort of extends into, well, not just hope, I expect that it would extend into that. But in the very beginning, I guess audio and video, just to, again, to get the common people with their sort of a monkey existence to get them engaged. Okay, so anyway, the way in which people sort of create these labels and create these tags, I think we'll have a sort of a couple significant sort of dimensions of growth and of sort of development of technology. One is the development of tools and support. Well, primarily, I guess if I'm really gonna sort of try to put a hard divide here, that it would be the development of automated labeling and tagging, of automated analysis. Now, I mean, there is this middle ground of having sort of tools to support humans, which so for example, doing a sort of audio analysis or video analysis such that let's say video analysis such that it'll like these the in the graphical user interface, there's often this sort of snap to grid type of capability that software has that will sort of auto align things. Well, in selecting time frames, it could be that the tool will automatically detect significant transitions in what's happening in the video scene, and will offer a kind of it will maybe mark those transitions and offer sort of a snap to this point, just to make it easier for the person doing the labels to just to support them. So that's a kind of a human sort of human support type of technology. I mean, that's very, very simple, low level. But other is doing like this just automated analysis. And again, very, very low level automated analysis might be that sort of video stability type of stuff. But as things develop, I mean, it could be that that a great deal of growth is possible here. And I mean, I think a great deal of growth is desirable here to get as much machine sort of automated sort of analysis and labeling and tagging. I'm really, really to grow that area, I think is important. Okay, so the other dimension of this is when humans are required, or the extent to which humans are required. And I think that it might be just sort of ongoing that I think humans will continuously be, I mean, will sort of be required for I mean, as long as anyway, for a long, long time. There was this talk by the CAPTCHA guy, Luis von Ahn, given at Google. He's given several talks. He sort of rehashes it, but there's just the one I saw, and I think probably one of his early talks was given as a Google Tech talk. He's given at Google, where he describes. First he talks about he introduces himself by talking about the CAPTCHA thing, which was his thesis, I guess. But anyway, he describes a way to The talk was, I think, Human Computation was the name of the talk, a Google Tech talk, Human Computation by Louise von Ahn. Anyway, he describes a way, he created a game called Peekaboom, a web-based game, and it is a method to label images, to gather labels for static images. From people by presenting people with this game, and they play the game, and in playing the game, they end up generating generating labels for images, and those labels end up being useful in some other ways. But anyway, in generating the ontologies and the taxonomies, these sort of dictionaries of labels and their definitions and how that relates to something that happens sort of in reality or in the video, and the appropriate sort of descriptions, which I guess sort of attach the I mean, the label is attached to the definition. I think the definition would sort of be attached to this description, and the description would be sort of represented. I mean, going from the top down would be represented by all this this corpus of video, this which fits into that category, which fits into that label. Now, going from the bottom up is as you start with all this you start with all this video. And people are generating these just through human computation, through human analysis and human understanding and human recognition and so forth, human identification, that people are creating all these sort of descriptions of what they see is happening in the video. And then out of all these sort of descriptions, there is maybe a sort of a consolidation. Basically, how well do the various sort of descriptions fit? What are the perspectives and so forth? And out of that sort of arises these this sort of dictionary and this sort of labeling system. And rather than just a taxonomy. This sort of hierarchical taxonomy, which I think has a, I think it needs to be richer in the sense of that it includes a perspective type of that the data structuring rather than being this sort of simple hierarchy, that the data structure also incorporates a sort of a maybe like a perspective dimension or component kind of. So, and maybe that perspective component will be sort of a type of information processing, maybe like a stage of sort of human development or sort of a level of human development, a mindset, a type of. I mean, I mean, it could be that there are sort of just various sort of postures and stances in human information processing, that there's just very sort of a common. Set of, I mean, at least at the maybe basic level, there's a common set of postures and stances in the way people sort of interpret the world. Anyway, getting into that too much. Okay, so the back way up, there's this sort of media player that can be controlled by this program. And then this program has these sort of three sort of other sort of components that it draws from. One is a database of tags and labels and so forth. And then that database is created by. Or is sort of populated by, it's filled by, it's anyway, of people who are describing and annotating video. So that sort of suggests this other component, which is a program, a user interface, which allows people to label and tag the video. So there's a Google Tech Talk by this guy. I think he's wearing a yarmulke. He's like a graduate student. It's a little bit awkward to watch, but it's the V Code and V Data, I think, is the maybe the name of the talk, or it's related. Anyway, V Code and V Data is the name of a software to do video annotation. By this, I think these people are sociologists. So again, they are not engineers. They are not information scientists. They are not physicists. They are not. I mean, they have. They're operating outside of their domain, and in their domain, they have a rather weak and gooey existence in terms of traction with reality. But nonetheless, there was a sort of a again, there's this recognition of what would be useful, and that they're trying to do it. They're just not equipped to do it well. And also, I mean, it's good that they're not equipped to do it well, because they would do it wrong. They're not sort of ethically and morally and I'm capable of, I think really, I think they have a very distorted and demented view of things because of the way in which they're operating. It's just the nature of their domain, of being sociologists, of just sort of living and thinking and existing in that. In that mindset, and that worldview is sort of fundamentally dementing and corrupting. And in the past, I think I've sort of used the term narcissism to mean something that is maybe close, better described as egocentrism, or I've actually sort of created my own definition for it. I think it's quite possible that I've been using that term in a way that is not at all sort of consistent with the most popular definition. But if the most popular definition is sort of having this sort of external locus of identity. Locus or locust, which the one that's not the bug, the center of identity is a sort of external, in the sense of one sort of measures themselves and defines themselves and sees themselves in terms of how others see them. And that very, I think that's kind of sort of the core of this whole discipline of. This sort of academic discipline and this sort of social organization and culture of academic sociology. Anyway, there's a lot of delusion involved in the way information is processed, I think, in that sort of a narcissistic mindset. That there isn't there aren't good ways to do error detection and correction. It's not part of, and consequently, it's not really it's not deeply integrated into the discipline, simply because there's not a good way to do it, I think. That they just don't have they don't have good ways to the narcissist doesn't have, I think, good ways to reconcile. To really sort of explore and answer questions like, am I wrong? and they don't have good ways to filter out their impulses and their biases and their distortions, because they don't have this good reconciliation with a reality that can be that can be sort of tested and reassessed and reevaluated and re sort of experienced. They're really, really quite lost. I mean, it could be that this desire to have a record is maybe sort of motivated by that deficiency. And so these sociologists at UIUC, I think it is, have this project of V-code and V-data, which is, I think, generally poorly engineered and because they're not engineers and they just don't have experience of that. So, and I think realistically, on such a small scale, it's just prone to corruption and to corrupt usage. Okay, so anyway, there's this software component. It's very, very much like the type of software that is used to generate subtitles for movies and television and so forth. Now, this software, I think, could and maybe should be. I don't know about should be, but could be part of the media player. It just expand the interface to include this labeling stuff. I mean, especially if while one is sort of exploring their sort of video library, that they find stuff that is sort of mislabeled or they have opportunities. It would be. I think maybe convenient. I don't know about the actual implementation, but it might be convenient just to be able to pause, to expand the interface, to explore the existing labels, and to tweak, to make adjustments. And of course, I think all these adjustments need to be revision controlled, and they need to be shared. And that's this other component. I don't know if this recording is going to be helpful or not, because it's kind of all over the place and it's full of tangents and whatnot. But I suppose it is quite a bit more consolidated than the total corpus that is spread out over that consists of many recordings like this spread out over a couple of years. That is the Project Prometheus archive. So there are these subtitle editor type of programs, which is sort of very similar to this sort of V code program. They call it video coding. These sociologists generating these labels. Subtitling is basically labels and tags. For time frames of the video, it focuses more on the audio. Unfortunately, the subtitle editors focus more on the audio track. That is, selecting the time frame is done on the audio track rather than on the video track, which is really awkward. It means that the subtitle editor software, even for a prototype or a sort of a demonstration of concept, is almost unusable. Because of this small critical problem, that it's unusable to create labels, I think, for video time frames. So the subtitles are labels for the audio time frames, and that audio track just happens to correspond with the video track. But again, in labeling the video track, it's incredibly awkward to try to to create that correspondence without the support of the software. I mean, I think the subtitle software just really, really fell on its face in this regard. Aegis Sub, for example, AEGISUB, is an example of a subtitler software that has just very, very rich capabilities for generating labels for the audio track, and then placing those labels with a variety of fonts and whatnot onto the onto the video track in a variety of ways and in all kinds of different positions and whatnot. But just completely missed out on the whole game of labeling what's happening in the video track. I mean, they just totally missed the utility of that. So anyway, this media player might incorporate this sort of additional sort of interface to support this capability of annotating, of labeling, of tagging time frames in the video track and the audio track, and then of course managing those labels of selecting and of describing and so forth. And there's this huge I think domain of social, something like what's called social networking, or of project collaboration, of people sort of working together to generate these labels and tags, but moreover, and beginning to tie this together. I mean, these different components are tied together in a variety of ways. So the ability to use these labels in order to create compositions, in order to create these what the sort of museum people called exhibits, or that's sort of the artistic side of it. But then there's this sort of analysis side of it, to be able to mine a library, to mine a corpus, to do a sort of statistical analysis. And once the labels exist, I mean, the ability to do statistical analysis and maybe even do things like machine learning and so forth, but put that aside for a moment. It's a little bit hand-wavy, at least in my mind it is right now. I don't like that term, hand-wavy. I'm really not part of that way of doing things. But anyway, in this process of looking for, of mining this corpus in order to find new descriptions, to be able to recognize patterns of well of anything, but patterns of behavior, patterns of I guess behavior is sufficiently abstract. To find new patterns and then to describe those patterns, basically to model them, to create a sort of a description, and out of that description, to have labels with definitions that maybe the pattern that found is a class of patterns that have different variations. And anyway, so there's this this whole sort of research side to this. Side isn't the right word. This research sort of aspect to which is involved in generating the sort of the ontologies and the taxonomies and the labels. And at this point, you're probably beginning to recognize one of the major sort of feedback circuits, one of the major sort of cycles in this system, and how this system is kind of reliant upon itself, but in a very very another aspect of it, which is very very important, is that it's not tautology, that it has traction with reality, at the that there is this very, very significant component of data, of grounded, sensor data, that is upon which this feedback generating information generate this feedback machine, this information generating feedback machine is sort of based and built upon this foundation of high traction with reality measurements and sensor data. In the early stages, I think, again, just to bootstrap this whole system and begin to generate revenue so that to fund the engineering and fund the education of engineers, which can continue to build this stuff and sort of fund sort of the librarians and the researchers. The very early stage again would be this simple, in comparison, product of this media player with these labeling capabilities, and this very very important aspect of of sort of collaboration of. So there's this program that's controlling the media player. That program gets its data from a database of annotations and labels. That database of annotations and labels is generated by this sort of additional user interface of the media player that allows a person to generate labels. Some of those labels are generated in an automated fashion by machine analysis. I think I left off when discussing Louis von Ahn and his human computation thing, that many of the sort of the labels and the reconciliations of discrepancies could be handled in the form of of asking people questions, of presenting sort of side by side, presenting data and asking people questions about this data. So for example, the behavior that is sort of this description of a behavior, which is represented. Here are three video clips, or here are two video clips, and. Here's this description of behavior, and which video clip is sort of better described by this description of behavior, or here are like three pictures, which two are more closely sort of related, and in which way? Basically, all these sort of there might be all these different types of games and all these different types of sort of interaction type of systems that interaction type of interfaces and games and workflows, which can be sort of just sort of applied on large scale, that people can just sort of opt in and be like, okay, I'll play this game for a few minutes, or I'll do this for a few minutes, or they might be watching a video and anyway, that there can be this interaction with the interaction with the system to resolve some of these discrepancies. So. I think I left that out when I started talking about the Louis von Ahn's Google Tech Talk about human computation. I might not have like closed on where I was going with that, but that's where I was going with that. Okay, now two more really, well one more really big component, and then one I think critical characteristic. Of the system. Well, critical might not be the right term, but it's important in the long run, this characteristic of the system. And this is a little bit of a teaser because I'm going to do the other component first. So that third last big component. I might have left some stuff out. Jesus. Okay. Another big component is this. So there are the individual people with their individual libraries and their individual sort of database of tags and labels and descriptions and so forth that are they can research their corpus of media, and they can create these montages and collages and these sort of playback scenarios that are based on sort of these abstract. Tags. Basically, at this moment in the video, if things go this, or at this moment in the collage, at this moment in the compilation, if things go a certain way, then draw upon the media library some video that has these characteristics and play it here. So it can be like this abstract composition that can be filled in. Moreover, the way it's filled in might actually draw upon user preferences. Abstractly, something of this type that meets these user preferences. So I mean, it can be a very, very specialized, very customized composition that is quite dynamic, that changes with the sort of the richness of the library. It changes with the user preferences, and it changes from playback to playback. that's an example use case. But anyway, so there are these individual people who have their own sort of corpus of media and their own sort of database, and they're using this this software to label and annotate their videos, to create these sort of collages, to control their playback, they're setting up their preferences and so forth. So there's this this other sort of component. This other, I think, there needs to maybe be this sort of something like a third party. For these distributed entities of these individual people with their sort of individual data and there needs to be this sort of central organization. So it's this centrally organized distributed entity type of architecture. This central organization might be first it needs to be an unimpeachable integrity type of an institution. Maybe something like a public benefit corporation or a nonprofit corporation. And I mean, even though it's a nonprofit corporation, that doesn't mean that it doesn't have money and doesn't control resources. It just means that that money and those resources aren't being funneled to some group of some small group of people, the owners or the stockholders, but rather it's a sort of it's kind of like publicly owned, I suppose. Or actually, the whole notion of being owned maybe doesn't apply. But it's this social institution that has sort of this existence, and I think it actually should have a brick and mortar existence, and should have an existence in a sort of the minds of some people. I think that's the big investment in sort of creating a sort of a culture in the minds of people, this living that a social institution needs to have this sort of living component in the minds of people, and this investment in people. And making it a nonprofit organization that is of the sort of the library service type how potent of a strategy this is in the long term, or if it's even worth mentioning here. This recording is sort of approaching an hour. But anyway, the public service student loan forgiveness program in the United States is such that a person who is employed by who's a full-time employee of a nonprofit organization of a certain type, and a library is one of those types, is has their student loans forgiven after 10 years. So that, in conjunction with the income contingent repayment plan If as an employee of a sort of this nonprofit organization, if they're being paid basically minimum wage, then their student loan repayment would basically, I think, be zero. Now, for a person to live sort of to be able to exist with dignity and and to have a lifestyle that is conducive to sort of being a holder of, a carrier of, part of this culture, of this noble institution. I mean, it could be that facilities, dormitories, sort of like just studio apartments. Some of the revenue of this of this sort of this corporation, this library, this social institution, some of the revenue would probably need to be invested in supporting the life of these people who carry the culture of the institution. Okay, so there's this central organization, there's this library, and what this library does, I think, instead of managing the actual artifacts, in the sense of a museum having sort of trinkets and whatnot, or a library having shelves and shelves and shelves of printed books, rather than being a data archive in the sense that it is archiving the actual artifacts, the audio and the video recordings. I think the better way to do it, at least in the short term, simply to avoid high costs of having this all the expense of the data storage and all the issues in terms of all these sort of the copyright issues on the data of basically these television shows and these movies and so forth. That what this library does is it manages the metadata. It manages the tags and the labels and the descriptions. It manages it supports the sort of the the analysis, and it supports researchers and people who are creating not just the entertainment style collages, but people who are sort of mining this stuff and creating sort of presentations and exhibits, so to say, which sort of support their or which are sort of examples and exemplars of the patterns that they have noticed. And then, of course, there's the statistical analysis, which would go much, much further in supporting, not supporting, but in sort of, got to get the perspective right on this, so the chain of sort of, not really causality, but of the reasoning process isn't backwards or distorted. But anyway, there's this statistical analysis which sort of underlies this description and this sort of recognition of a pattern, this description of the pattern in their this exhibit, this composition, this mosaic, this exhibit of exemplars of examples, which sort of are the basis, are the sort of the backing of this. Well, they're examples of this description. Anyway, there's this whole research, and this very, very real sort of, in its importance, aspect to all of this. But there's also the whimsical, playful, artful, entertainment aspect to all of it. And then everything in between. There's also, there's finding disease and finding problems and finding opportunities and so forth. So in the management of this in the management of this metadata, in the curation of it, in the way this people sort of work together and share and interact with this library. I think there are various different the way data is sort of made available to people and the way they involve the way they're involved. I mean, it could be, there are probably plenty of opportunities there, so that different types of people who have different types of involvement might actually be sort of contributing in a variety of ways. And some of those ways would involve the contribution of revenue, in the sense of just like money. Data could also be sold to a variety of people, and again, this comes back to the sort of unimpeachable integrity of the institution, that the data being sold is not. It doesn't disrespect, undermine, or expose people, the people who are, something like trust. I mean, the people who are involved in the community aren't being sort of sold into servitude or created or sold as targets or sort of exposed to any kind of a manipulation or whatever. But rather, the data being sold might be of the form of how to do things better. It's like the producers of sort of cinema or television series and so forth might be given feedback, not given, sold, sort of the feedback they need to do their job, to do what they do in a more effective way. Now, I mean, if what they're doing is maniacal, then of course don't want to make them more effective. Rather to increase the quality or to increase to make to be less sick, to be less to be more constructive, to be more sort of anyway. Getting kind of exhausted here, so there's that component. I think that describes almost everything. Let's see. So there's the there's this media player, all the way back at the beginning of this recording an hour ago, that has these various capabilities for playing media that is controlled by this program, and that program is drawing from a sort of a database of annotations and tags and of user preferences and of sort of instructions on what type of what to play back. I mean, is to play back a sort of a certain type of collage, or to play back instructions on sort of search queries to respond to sort of queries and searches on all kinds of different anyway. So there's this media player that has this sort of a database of labels and tags, and has all these sort of user preferences, and has this sort of user input in the form of searches and queries. And those labels and tags also include compositions and exhibits and so forth. This media player has this sort of additional capability of this rich user interface for updating, changing, creating labels and tags and descriptions and so forth. There's this sort of interaction with centrally organized library social institution, which From which sort of data can be drawn and data can be given, and there's all kinds of sort of interaction and collaboration between people. There are these sort of various games and various other interfaces to resolve sort of discrepancies and maybe even just to create labels. There are all kinds of sort of maybe rich interface for creating labels of all kinds of different types. People just sort of set their preferences and what their have like a rich sort of database of their preferences and their various moods and their various sort of s what interests and so forth, specializations and at any particular moment, a person can just sort of say, "Hey, I'm interested in this." I want to do this for a few minutes, and they do it for a few minutes. And anyway, all kinds of different ways to engage the system. The system might also have sort of be sort of sending out sort of opportunities on people who have different sort of capabilities, different characteristics, and so forth. They sort of set their status, and the system sort of feeds out. This feeds to them sort of opportunities. It's like, hey, this needs to be done, and this ne sort of this list of things that that the person could potentially sort of bid on or just sort of select. Ooh, I'll do that out of this queue of stuff that's sort of scrolling by. It could be that all kinds of different things like that could be sort of arranged so that people find it more engaging. Okay, so that brings me to the this last sort of characteristic of this system, and this is a big one. And in the early phases, I don't know how much. I mean, I think it needs to be probably built into the infrastructure, but it is sort of really, really sort of tricky, and it might not actually be sort of turned on or engaged until later. But the early architects need to, I think, need to sort of include this requirement in the architecture. And that is that the person is that there's instrumentation. Local instrumentation, that there's real world data, traction with reality type of data, not coming from, but so yeah, I guess sort of coming from each person. Now, that's not to say that it's actually in its sort of raw, exposed, privacy sort of penetrating way that it's sent to anywhere. That's not the case whatsoever. But rather, rather, I think that the user interface needs to have sort of built into its fundamental architecture this involvement, this inclusion of real sort of measurements of the user and of the user's environment. I mean, this might extend. I mean, this really, really extends into Project Cyborg in one dimension, and in other dimensions, especially in terms of how people are working together, it extends into cyborg society. But anyway, that's all from Project Prometheus. Basically, the state of the software, what the software is doing, I think needs to be instrumented and recorded, or have the capability. It needs to be the architecture of the software needs to be such that it can include instrumentation so that it can record itself, what it's doing. Second, the system needs to include instrumentation of the user. Very, very simple, I mean, mouse clicks and keyboard actions is a very, very simple example of data sources from the user, which can be recorded. Basically, when each key press occurs and how the mouse is moving, I mean, just recorded with time. Then, sort of extending that further is the camera recording basically a video of the user, which, and then the type of analysis that might be involved there would be eye tracking, where's the gaze, and micro expression analysis. So these are types of automated analysis. And of course, the video of the user would not be exposed in any way that this person does not choose for it to be exposed. I mean, privacy protection is absolutely critical, and of course, I mean it's a fundamental component, and really, really need to go to Project Prometheus, Project Cyborg within Project Prometheus, and unfortunately, that stuff is really difficult to access without this software. I mean, if this software existed, then that stuff, Project Prometheus, could be annotated and mined and refined, and various sort of exhibits of core concepts could be created in a variety of ways, which would be sort of easily accessible, and people could get these ideas very quickly. And even those exhibits could one would not need necessarily go all the way back to the fundamental recordings. That those people who have done the research and explored that stuff could then sort of create their sort of interpretation and expression of the exhibit. And their expression might be more palatable. Their sort of presentation of it, their expression of it. Or they're basically their version of it. I mean, it might be more palatable, might be more refined, it might be more whatever, might be just better, more easily received. but anyway, it doesn't exist yet, so we got a little bit of a bootstrapping problem. So anyway, this core software extends into. Extends into this rich sort of sensor type of instrumentation, data recording and data analysis type of system. But I think in the very, very short term, simply sort of having the facilities for the software to monitor itself, to record itself, and to record the keyboard and the mouse, and then to have a subsystem type of data coming from the user, in the form of, again, eye tracking, or gaze tracking, whatever, micro expression analysis, maybe biometric sensors on the user. I mean, much, much simpler than that is, instead of the keyboard and the mouse, in addition to the keyboard and the mouse, of having sort of a different control panel, which is much, much more suited to annotating video, and to exploring a sort of a media corpus, a media library, navigating through it quickly and zooming through zooming and scanning through video, of having a sort of controls that are more sort of capable. And again, this is USB. This is not from a hardware and software perspective. I mean, this is not really difficult. I mean, pure software people might be a little bit bedazzled by it, and pure hardware people might find the other side of it a little bit what the hell. But people who can serve with both hands, I mean, it's not a big deal. That's a William Gibson Count Zero, I think it was. Anyway. Okay, I think that's the sort of the whole thing. That's what needs to happen in the short term. Some, of course, many aspects of this. I mean, this even this short term project probably needs to be broken divided into several phases. And the early bootstrapping I mean, the way to bootstrap this whole process, I mean, it might be such that the early system can be very much simple in comparison. I mean, it'd probably be a elaborate piece of software, but simple in comparison to what I've been describing. but just to bootstrap a sort of a revenue system. And as revolting as this might be to some people, simply because this domain is run amok is maybe not the right term, because that sort of kind of suggests that it was sort of well organized in the beginning, and I don't think it ever was. I think it just sort of came out of the sort of the cesspool of life. As this just sort of hideous, monstrous absurdity, but some of the very very early software, in order to generate revenue, some of the early application the early users might be very sort of pornography sort of centric, in that. I don't think the software necessarily should specialize in that, but the early users the early adoption might be it might be that there aren't a whole lot of people who want to annotate Star Trek. Or annotate the Big Bang Theory, or so that they can do research on it and mine it and control their playback in a variety of ways. Star Trek, you get nerds who want to look for sort of all kinds of technical details and have cool compositions that they find exciting. Big Bang Theory, you might have people who are interested in trivia, or people who just want to look at the. Actually, probably getting into the sort of the pornography kind of. It's kind of lame that just how bad this arena is of sort of erotic entertainment isn't maybe the right word. Art isn't the right word, but somewhere between entertainment and art, or some. Other sort of basically having this sort of I mean what currently exists is just so ugly and hateful and sick that without this ability to filter out to basically to label and describe Well, let me rephrase that and turn it around a little bit. With the ability to label and describe what's happening, the hateful stupidity and incompetence of the camera operator. I mean, just the obnoxiousness of the camera operator of deliberately being. I'm just sort of this hateful stupidity of deliberately being. Well. Of being what he is, in conjunction with incompetence. So there's this sort of hateful stupidity involved in sort of deliberately being obnoxious, and that in conjunction with the incompetence, and then there are all kinds of like performance performance failures, in particular there are all kinds of stupid ugly stuff happening there that can be filtered out. But anyway, if this stuff is labeled, then people can create the sort of compositions and montages and have a sort of a rich library. This might be a sort of a significant portion of the sort of early adopter population, and. The people involved in that, especially the people who don't want to be. The people who are not perverts and who don't want to sort of be I'm deeply involved in it, but they just want to have access to a better erotic entertainment, erotic art sort of experience, something that isn't just so riddled with just this malignant stupidity and hatefulness. That might be the source of revenue. They might pay. They might pay to they might pay to have access to something that isn't that isn't just a hideous. So I mean that might be the early revenue stream of just a lot of people involved. I think it's hilarious. I mean, this is kind of arbitrary, but I think it's hilarious that the recent release of or not recent the upcoming release of the next long-term support version of Ubuntu is called Bionic Beaver. that's hilarious. Okay, anyway, that might be a sort of an ideal target platform for this software. For the first versions of this software, maybe to just really try maybe to leverage some of that infrastructure from Ubuntu, Bionic Beaver. I guess that brings me to the next. There might be again for revenue additional sort of hardware. So there are the nerds and there are the researchers and the nerds and the perverts who would buy hardware to label and annotate their video, something better than the keyboard and mouse, some better sort of a interface in order to really have sort of deep high resolution, high efficiency control over the navigation and exploration of their video library and the tagging process and so forth. I mean, the real sort of elites in this system. But beyond that, there are other hardware opportunities. And again, this might be a very very important component of the revenue. Are these other hardware components of I suppose there's something like a remote control. I mean, someone who has a sort of a media center, and they just want a remote control playback of their videos, and they want to be able to draw upon this. They want this media player as a media center, and they want to have a sort of a control over their. They want to use these annotations, to use these resources, to use this playback control to have more control over their media. If nothing else, just to control their volume, to set their preferences. Is like it's late in the evening, I'm here alone, I'm in bed, I don't want I want to watch this movie, but I don't want to have the sort of the explosions and the tantrums and the stuff like that. I want the volume to like rattle the pictures off the wall and to basically to disturb the neighbors and stuff. So to automatically automatically adjust the volume on things like that. Or maybe whatever. So there's the media center use case where the person would have maybe something like a remote control. Type of device that gives them sort of richer control of their media playback and exploration of their library through this sort of more convenient limited access but remote control. That's a type of product. There's the erotic art sort of entertainment type of product that the person wants control of their. This montage, this sort of compilation, this sort of it might be that these montages are created as sort of narratives, as stories, as scenarios that have this that draw upon this sort of media library that is sort of uses these annotations in conjunction with the user preferences to pull out certain types of stuff, segments from this media library, and display them in a variety of ways to move the this sort of participant to this user through this scenario, and there might be some kind of a control type of device, so that the user can sort of control that scenario, while this type of a control interface might sort of have indicators of certain types and be sort of usable in a certain situation that is all sort of conducive to. I don't know if that makes any sense, but I'm veiling kind of the obvious. Use your imagination. Anyway, the point is that there are these hardware products, and that is these early adopter hardware products. And it could be that that is a business model that is well understood, and can be a sort of an important source of revenue, especially a sort of early bootstrapping revenue. And one of the interesting things of hardware is that it suggests sort of a stability and a longevity that I think people would find more sort of reassuring. If they're going to really become invested, invest their time, their energy, their effort in sort of creating this basically of all this of creating all these annotations, these labels, these tags, all these compositions. They are sort of investing and building upon this foundation that I think it's important that they have confidence in order to do that. I think it's important that they have confidence. It will be important for them that it's not this sort of fly by night sort of operation that's just going to collapse and all their efforts is going to be lost. So having well thought out, high quality, good design interfaces, and especially since these are physical interfaces, I think it's like critically important that they be and high quality. I don't mean sort of snotty in style. I'm not talking like Steve Jobs type of but more like it's gonna endure use. That it is sort of efficient and effective, and it's sturdy. They're going to be able to use it to do what they want to do. They're going to appreciate it. It doesn't feel flimsy. It has good sort of ergonomic feedback, and it's sort of this conveys this. Message that this is sort of an intelligent, long-standing. This is a sort of a has a basis in intelligence and thoughtfulness and vision, and is being built to endure and to survive and to last. Okay, so there are the early sources of revenue. I suppose this sort of central organization that has these library-like capabilities and services, and could also have an educational sort of component. Has. I mean, one of the educational components might be just like how to train cameramen, certificate program to train camera operators, to begin to fix the pornography industry. If that whole mess, that cesspool of disease and. Well, first, I think it's really, really important to study stupidity in its many, many forms, and the malignancy of stupidity. To really study this, sort of the epidemiology of it. And I think one of the sort of the richest places, I think, to really, really begin to study this, I mean, one of the many sort of very, very sort of putrid cesspools is the whole pornography industry. So there's that. Anyway, I guess this is sufficient.